Is up. What's up? What's up, Soul Warriors? Welcome to this Saturday night Soul Session Live with me, Reverend LC, and you. I'm excited to be here. It is National Recovery Month. I want to know what you're celebrating. I want to know what you're struggling with. Man, I want to know it all. So I just wanted to show up here tonight in honor of all of that, honor of all of and hey, let's talk recovery. It's such a multi, faceted holes topic and subject matter, because recovery has caught on so strongly in the years that I've been doing stuff like this, that there's just it's broadened so much, I guess I should say. You know, we had a goal when we began doing stuff like this, online recovery community. We had a goal of making recovery the epidemic. And, you know, while I think that we're not completely there yet, we're definitely on our way. And I believe that we've made a really big difference. And I believe that wherever you are in your recovery journey tonight, whether you're standing on the edge, about ready to step in, whether you've been here a long time, you're making a valuable difference in your life too. So I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful to be celebrating this National Recovery Month with all of you. You are amazing human beings. And I don't have to know you to know that. I just know the soul of people that have struggled with substance use addictions and really honestly any type. You know, there's more people in the world, to be honest with you, that have addiction issues in their life. Maybe they see them, maybe they don't. You know, I think almost the gift of those of us that are in substance use types of recovery and have had substance use addictions, there is this intensity that calls you towards healing. And it gets very, very strong, and our lives depend on it. That's why I think that we're so valuable in this time, in this space, in this reality that we're in, that we're living in right now. I mean, it's a scary time for a lot of reasons. But what scares me the most, I believe, honestly, is the fact that there is so many people that are losing their lives before they have that opportunity to step in and heal. And we're not guaranteed tomorrow. It doesn't matter what space you're in. That's the nature of life. But when we are inactive, when we're in active addiction, there is quite a bit more of a chance for us to not make it to that defining moment when we stand up and say, enough's enough. There has to be more to life than this. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. If y'all see me a little bit distracted, I just wanted to share this. Actually just wanted to share this video out and, you know, to some places. I don't always anymore take a whole lot of time in sharing these out. Not because I don't think that it's important, but just because, you know, I'm always so, I look forward to this day to be able to come and do what brings me joy. And it brings me joy to share about this stuff to you, with all of you, because I just didn't ever expect to be here. I never made any plans to honestly be alive this long. And so, you know, we all think that we are the most hopeless. We all think that, you know, we've done so much that we can't come back from it. And I'm living proof of that, which is why I started doing this in the first place, because, you know, I felt like, holy crap. Like if I can get up from my give up and I can create a life that I love, man, you know, like I know that anybody can do it. And not to make it sound simple, not trying to make it sound light, not trying to make it sound simple, because it's going to be the hardest process you've ever been through, but it'll also be the most rewarding. So I want us to talk about this tonight. I really want to know, wherever you're watching us from, whatever one of the platforms that you're watching us from, I'd like for you to tell me, what are you celebrating in this National Recovery Month, and what are you struggling with? And if I can get some answers back, I'd really love to speak to those things. If you feel comfortable sharing, I know we're kind of in an open public space. We're live on 6 platforms right now. So it's going to be hard for me to get to everyone. So if there's anyone out there that I know, and I'll look in just a minute, but, if there's anyone out there who doesn't mind helping me field questions or comments or things that people say in case I miss them, I would greatly appreciate that. And if not, maybe we're just going to have an amazing, amazing time tonight. All right. So that's me. I'm glad to be here. National Recovery Month. So let's talk recovery. If you're ready, I'm ready. Let's go. Full amazing souls, you. Thanks for being here. Let me give a shout out to my sister, my soul sister, Pamela Topchia, and thanks for making it. I'm glad you were here. You know, you can get her amazing book, and she's writing another one right now, but you can get her book on Amazon.com/Pamela Topchian. Her book is I Didn't Come This Far, It Only Come This Far. A great message for what we're talking about tonight, man, because there is no ceiling to the amazingness that is you and that you can create in your life. You just have to do the first part, which is get up from your give up. You can't be powerful and pitiful at the same time. You can't be happy and sad in the same moment. And there are some amazing things that we as human beings can do to show ourselves who we are. So pick up Pamela's book, I Didn't Come This Far, It Only Come This Far, on Amazon by typing in Pamela Topchian, T-O-P-J-I-A-N. Let me say what's up to Michael Fiera. Sober Press. If you don't know nothing about the Sober Press, then go ahead and hit him up, telling stories of recovery, man, just giving people hope and love through everything he does. He was a guest on this show as well. You can go back on YouTube and check his video out. One of my amazing, beautiful, like, family. Lisa Bailey's here. What is up, Lisa? I'm looking forward to hoping to get down there and see you guys. I miss y'all so much. Send the girls, the rest of the girl crew, my love. What is up, Joe? Good to see you. I love you guys. What's up, Michelle Hampton? Thank you so much for being here. And if anyone else is out there that I haven't called out or said hello to, hey there, what's up? Thanks for being here. And thanks to all those that will actually watch this at a later date. I kind of believe these things are almost like anything. They're kind of timeless. You run across them when you need to. You know, I don't know necessarily where to start tonight. Man, I appreciate Joe. Oh, yeah, on Instagram, Deadpan Comedy, at Deadpan Comedy, is my good friend Joe's channel. I put some great little shorts up, and they're really nice. I love seeing people create and do different things, man. It makes me excited. And yeah, I'm done with the sharing out at this point. I'm kind of over that already. So listen, it's National Recovery Month. So what does this mean, man? For me in my life, sometimes the day-to-day, even though I know I'm always in recovery and I really am always trying to move towards an even better version of myself, National Recovery Month gives me the opportunity to just kind of sit down for a minute and get quiet within myself and really look at how far I've come, where I've been, and how it all intertwined to make me who I am. You know, I began drinking the first time I ever really had a real drink and got drunk, I was 11 years old. And I remember being going through so much in my life. I dealt with a whole lot of sexual abuse and emotional, mental, and physical abuse as a kid. I knew I was different from the get-go. I always felt not at home in my own skin. I also didn't feel like I belonged in my family, to be honest, because I was a real hothead. And I just had this very boisterous personality, and my family were all very conservative and calm. And so there was all this disconnect. And so I found alcohol. I had met my father when I was 8 years old, and he was my hero. For what, I don't really know. It was just the unknown, the factor of the unknown. I knew he had walked away from our family, but my parents were young. They weren't really in love. They just got pregnant. And back in 1970 something, they made you get married. So, you know, I always kind of felt it. I took it really personally. And so I felt this great disconnect with him, and he was a drinker. So that is exactly where I had my first drink. And my first drink led to, you know, the binge drinking every chance I got from the time I was 11, because it was the first time that I could, because I was also painfully shy. Like, I was very introverted, along with having this boisterous personality. I was introverted, painfully shy, had learned through abuse not to be noticed, that the way to stay safe is don't be noticed. So I was always at war with myself. When I took that drink, and I say take that one drink, but it was when that feeling hit. When that feeling of that alcohol hit, it was an escape. And I just remember being a kid and thinking, oh my gosh, this is it. This is the answer. This is the only way that I don't have to feel what it's like to be me. Like, I can forget what's happening at home. I can forget having to be scared all the time. I can forget, you know, the awful feelings that came along with, you know, sexual abuse. And so it also, I started noticing as time went on that it allowed me to be social. And so very early on, I got this belief in my head that the only way to be social was to drink. And so I became that friend. It was like from the moment I started, the whole, it's why I so much really have some belief systems around that addiction can run through families, that it can have something to do with genetics. Now, I don't know how true that is or not. You know, I'm not a scientist, but all I know is from that first moment for me, it was like I was immediately hooked. And I was that friend that, you know, went to high school, and I was that friend that got drunk at all the parties. And so it got to where nobody wanted to take me anywhere, because while I would be fun for a little while, eventually it would get to be too much, and somebody would end up having to take care of me, or I'd be in really bad situations. So it was affecting me in negative ways from the very start, from the very beginning. And, you know, that, of course, I didn't have any fear. It was so strange. I was such a fearful kid because of everything that was happening, but when it came to substances, I had zero fear, none whatsoever. It was like I would grab something and take it to the limit. You know, from the first time, I was not afraid to try new things. The harder it was, you know, the harder the substance was, the more I wanted to try it. And I just wasn't scared. And to say that, so I'm about to say something that's going to sound kind of contradictory, but me not being scared scared me probably more than anything, because I knew that I would try anything. I would try anything. And I did. You know, I remember being 12 years old, and this older neighbor kid brought this stuff down, and he called them poppers. And it was this little bottle, and it had this label on it. It said VCR head cleaner. And I remember trying that. I mean, he was like, it was classic after school special. Here, try some of this and blah, blah, blah. And I did. And man, I remember even from that feeling like I was out of control, like going back up to him, like the next day, going to his house, like, hey man, can you get some more of that? Can I get some more? And it was so much, like I was so much, sorry about that. I was so much that it scared him. He was like, this one's going to take this too far and I'm going to get in trouble, you know, because we were kids. He was old. I think he was like 17 or something. But, you know, I just always had that ability to, I don't know, attract friend groups that were a little bit older than me, and whatever they were into, you know, I'd go right along with them. But it was very quickly, it was very noticeable, even for me at that age, that I didn't have any breaks. And so it would be later down the road that I would have ended, I tried opiates for the first time. And I didn't really know that you could take them for fun until I did. And once I did, like everything else, it was off to the races. Because for that first time, you know, when the opiates hit, that was a feeling that was much different than the alcohol and stuff. Like that was a feeling that says, huh, everything's okay. Everything is okay. For this one moment, this is what happiness feels like. And I had felt like I was having some like deep soul level search for happiness. And I just couldn't find it in my surroundings. And again, feeling so different. So, you know, that really quickly took off. I mean, that took off. And that whole thing. And I had my times. I would call myself, and I don't laugh at this to make it light. I laugh at it because it's a little bit ironic that, you know, there would be times when I would take a break from the opiates. Let's call that trying to get clean and sober, because I've only tried recovery once and I'm still in it. So clean and sober is a completely different thing than recovery. I tried to get clean and sober many times, many, many, many times. Never really changed anything up here and never really changed anything in here. But when I would do that, inevitably something else would show up. So I've had the opportunity. I don't know if it's the right word, but I think you'll get what I'm saying. I had the opportunity to have a stint of addiction on many different substances. And so I've run through the gamut. The reason I say it's an opportunity at this point is because I feel like I can relate to people that are, you know, recovering from different types of substances. And so what I can look back on now is kind of a gift. Then I just felt so weak. And that was the belief I had about myself, was that I was just so weak. You know, I was weak that I couldn't stop myself from being hurt. I was weak that I didn't feel at home in my own skin and I couldn't do anything about it but wish in secret. I was weak because I really didn't know how to stand up for myself. And what would happen is I would just, instead of like being assertive, being taught to be assertive and hold boundaries, or what boundaries even were, I would take something until I snapped. And then when I snapped, it was on. And I would end up doing something that was drastically harmful, you know, usually to another human being or a lot to myself. Because I would eventually get so down on myself that I became a cutter. Like I would mutilate my body. The long and short of all of this is I just didn't want to be alive. I didn't understand that happiness could be possible for someone like myself. And so all of those times of trying and failing gave me so much more ammunition to hate myself. I if anybody that's been here for a while, you've heard me use this statement many times, but this is my true belief system. I believed from the time I was a small child that I was God's little joke, and that anything bad that could happen would happen to me. Now, I realize now that that was a self-fulfilling prophecy, but then I just always felt trapped. And the only way that I could cope with any of that is through drug abuse and alcohol. It'd be bad relationships, harmful happenings. I mean, just anything I could do to put myself in danger, attempts on my own life, to take my own life. I mean, this was just how miserable I was. And I know that it's hard when you hear somebody, you know, who's no longer in that space talk about it. It's hard to really imagine that it was that intense and that severe, but it was. It really, really was. And saying all that, I come back here to this recovery month, and it gives me an opportunity to look at how far I've come, to look at everything that I've been through the lens of recovery and healing. And I'm so grateful that none of those attempts on my life worked, that none of the times that I flatlined in the hospital due to overdose or alcohol poisoning, that none of those times actually took, because I wouldn't have ever gotten to understand that true happiness comes from within. That there's not another person in the world that can come in and make you happy. They can add to your happiness, but until we get to a place from within, you know, we can't truly understand what that happiness really, really is. And I think that happiness is a term that we all have these mental pictures about, but it's more like fulfillment, I think, you know, because when we say, I'm so happy or whatever, there's this sneaky sense that happiness is supposed to be all the time. And that if we get happy and we can't stay happy, then something's wrong with us or we are failing. And that's just one of the lies. It's just one of the lies that, you know, society and advertising has taught us that, oh, it's the house that makes me happy. Oh, it's the family. It's the perfect family. It's the perfect car. It's the perfect item of consumption. When in reality, in this time, in this space, in this world, right now, in this reality, we are being called to realize, again, happiness comes from within. So my recovery journey began 10 years ago with a moment of super truth within myself. I had done the clean and sober thing. I had been doing pretty doggone good. And then some life happened that was overwhelming to me, and I went into a 9-month relapse. That 9-month relapse saved my life and my sanity, because at that point I had created too much to lose. And I think that's a valuable point. You know, while other people cannot make us happy, while we can't recover for others, we can start to recognize how our addictions are affecting other people. And it was for me, I had a young son. I've told this story many times, so I apologize to those that I'm repeating it for. But I had a young son, and he was in his early teenage years, his preteens, if you will. And there was this night, and I'm going to be graphic when I explain it and hope that I don't get banned, but I need to kind of set the stage for what was happening. I had been picked up on something. I had gotten out of jail. At the time I was using intravenous drugs at that point. I mean, I was in a full-blown heroin relapse. Fentanyl was just starting to hit the scene. And I had nowhere to put this shot except for in my neck. And so as my wife hits me there in the neck, I'm standing there and I'm waiting on the relief to come. I just remember the relief being so small that I thought to myself, this is what I'm going to give everything up for. This is what I spend all day, every day chasing, is this moment of relief. Now, that should tell you how miserable I was within myself to spend all of my time, all of my money, all of my effort to gain these moments of relief. And so it was just in that moment that I started having this conversation with myself where I was, you know, really saying that to myself, like, man, you're going to give everything up. You're giving it all away for these very short, very hard moments of relief. And I thought of my son at that moment too. I thought, is this what I would want him? Is this how I would want him to cope with his problems in life? Because life comes with problems. There's no way around it. And is this how I would want him to handle it? And what would happen if, you know, this went bad and me and his mom were both taken out and he was left by himself? And so I started having all these real life, real big existential questions happening within me. And it was just in that moment that I said, here's my choices. I'm either going to wait till everybody goes to bed tonight, and I'm going to leave here, and I'm going to spend whatever life I got left out on the street, which I'll give myself a week or 2 weeks tops. That way they'll just be better off without me, or I'm going to figure out how to change my head and my heart. Because I had been going through this long enough to know what my real triggers were. And my triggers were when I was getting caught in the past and reliving the experiences that I'd been through. And my focus at the time, because I had no idea about gratitude. I'd never even really heard the word in a space that made any real sense to me. Didn't make the word stand out, if that makes sense. And so I didn't know how to live life on my terms. I only knew how to catch the shit that I felt like life was throwing at me. And I really wasn't even doing that good a job at catching it. It was just landing all over me. And I really believed and thought that that was what life was, is that you play the hand you're dealt. And, you know, Martin John and I talked about this a couple of episodes ago, that, yeah, it's true. You do play the hand you're dealt, but how do you play it? I just never realized I had a choice. And I think that's what's happening for a lot of folks, is that we've grown up in these situations. Our life keeps showing us how we're vibrating on the inside. So if we come from trauma and we're still vibrating on the level of trauma, we are attracting more trauma back to us. And so it becomes this vicious cycle that just continues spiraling us down. And so I guess in some ways, I hope my story allows you to know that you have a choice wherever you are. Wherever you are in whatever journey you're going through, in whatever aspect of your life, you have a choice on how you're going to live it, on how you're going to be affected by it, on what you're going to do with that. And so it was on that night that I decided, I'm staying in here. I'm staying here. I'm going to learn how to do this. I'm going to make these major changes. I'm going to study my own past well enough to create myself a strategy for the future. Now, that was very, very quick. You know, I had two things I was going to do. This is how I was going to start it. I was going to tell the truth no matter what. Every time my mouth opened, I was going to tell the truth, whether it hurt feelings, whether I exposed something that I didn't want to really expose. I was going to tell the truth no matter what. And I signed up for an outpatient treatment program. And I also decided whatever they tell me to do, I'm just going to do. I'm going to do it no matter what. Even if I'm kicking and screaming a little bit, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do the opposite of whatever I think the right thing to do is. I'm just going to do the opposite and commit to it. And that's what I did. And there was so much white knuckling through all of that. And that's why Recovery Soul Food was born. That's why I started doing this stuff, because I thought I can't be the only one. 12 steps didn't resonate with me. I was on MAT then. I knew I needed to go back to that. I knew one of my biggest struggles. I mean, I had been an opioid addict for such a long time. I've had 17 stomach surgeries. I've had like 4 or 5 joint surgeries. I've had mouth surgeries. I mean, surgery was cool with me, because with surgery came, you know. So my body had been so altered that I knew that the pain and the withdrawals were going to be, no matter how committed I was in my mind, that it wasn't going to last past day 4. So I went back to MAT. I made this commitment to myself. I told the treatment center straight up. I said, I do not want to go over this milligram. I made a deal with myself. I worked my counseling. You know, I really worked my counseling, and I was really, really blessed. Now, I didn't start out with the best counselor. I had to go through a couple duds to finally get somebody who had the ability to help me, because I had been in and out of the mental health system since I was 14. I used to prize myself on being able to counsel the counselor better than they could counsel me. Or I became very, 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 very good at telling these people what I thought they wanted to hear. And so I think we got to know ourselves. You know, one of my biggest issues was sitting alone with myself. I could not be alone with my thoughts. I couldn't be alone with my past. I couldn't be alone with myself. So I always ended up having to be with somebody, like be in a relationship or something. I never wanted to be alone with myself. And in my first year of recovery, I was forced to be. You know, my wife and I went into treatment together. Unfortunately, during that time, she ended up having her own relapse. And once again, the God's little joke narrative came a-calling, because I thought, what are you doing? Like, I'm trying. I'm really trying. Like, I'm on to something. I think I can do it. Like, I'm working on this. It's already so hard. Da-da-da-da-da. All the stuff. And I just kept digging in. And I found what worked for me, in that I cannot stand hypocrites. And I never wanted to be a hypocrite for my son. So I was never going to look at him and say, don't do this, and me be doing it. So that is what honestly pulled me up on the days that I just wanted to join my wife. You know, thank God she is absolutely coming up on 7 years in recovery now. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. I'm so grateful to have had the experience, because once again, I can now relate to people and families that have, you know, like kids or family members or partners that are going through this. And so it really gave me a different perspective. Part of me knew that then, but I wasn't in a space where I could, you know, really see it so much for its big picture. But I still lived in a very victim mentality. I had not yet discovered that I also had a choice. I remember sitting there in my living room one day and I just dropped the weight of the world. You know, I felt like I had been balancing the weight of everything, a household and raising a son and trying to, you know, be a healthy partner, however you can be a healthy partner with, you know, someone that was within a relapse. I was doing all that. And I remember sitting in the exact space, in a chair, recliner chair that I had, and I was kind of sitting up on the edge and I was almost kind of rocking. And I remember in that moment that I was heard something on TV that was somehow about the brain. And it said, the brain does not know the difference between right now or 20 years ago. And so I realized that every time I was thinking back over those happenings, reliving that trauma, that my body didn't know that we weren't 5 or 11 or 20 at the time. I was going all the way back in and my body was experiencing that trauma all over again. And just what I said to you in the opening, you can't be powerful and pitiful at the same time. I realized so many things in that moment. Number one, I realized forgiveness was not for someone else. It was absolutely for me and my own freedom. And that to me made forgiveness, the forgiveness that was necessary for my recovery journey, that it made that process a bit easier, because realizing that I was not excusing someone for harming me, that I never even had to pick up the phone and call and say, I forgive you, that I had to do it within me and for me, because I was looking for my power, a power that I didn't even realize existed within me. And so maybe you're sitting somewhere tonight and don't realize how much power you have on the inside of you. You know, and when I ask the question, you know, what are we celebrating? What are we struggling with? You know, there's a space for some celebration. Doesn't matter where you hear it, why it clicks, or when it clicks, but the moment that you realize, look back over your life, even in active addiction, and realize how powerful you are. You have now become a dangerous situation. Not in a dangerous, negative, bad way, but a dangerous situation in the space of you're about to get up from your give up and you're just about to create a life you love. And I don't, you know, you don't even have to be in any type of substance use recovery to really understand that and hone in on that. See, we are creators. That's who we are. We have the opportunity and the gift to create the type of life we want to live. And we also have the amazing gift to know that that's going to always change, always evolve. And that's our gift as human beings. And so, you know, if there's any way that I can help you, empower you to realize your own power and how much, the word is not control, because that creates suffering. But the fact that you're holding the artist brush to the painting of your life, that you're doing that no amount of generational whatever is can paint your picture, that no amount of financial stress or addiction or stress or all of those things, that the only way that those things get to paint our life is that if we hand over the brush. And so in this recovery month, I hope that you pick your brush back up and you realize, holy crap, man, wait a minute. I get to change my glasses. I get to change the lens in which I'm seeing the world through, or this situation, or this person. Because ultimately, it all comes back here. It all comes back here. You know? And that's the point, I guess, of all of this, is to help you be powerful, is to help you understand that it doesn't matter where you are, where you've been, or where you currently find yourself. I've been homeless, absolutely been homeless. I've been homeless in my recovery journey. And still, there's not a space once you grasp who you are and what you have on the inside of you and what the possibilities for that is. There is nothing that can keep you in a space You have to take that victim suit off. And it doesn't mean that bad things didn't happen to you. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you've got to take the power back from those people. That was another thing that day in that chair that I realized is every single time I relive this, I am giving that person my power once again, and I cannot be powerful and pitiful at the same time. So what do I want from this life? What do I want? What example do I want to be to my son? I had to start embodying that far before I actually got there. And I was going through so much trauma. I had never truly attempted to heal my life. And now I was doing it not alone, where I could make all my big screw-ups and my messes by myself. I was making this within a family unit, a family that means everything to me, everything. And so I wasn't always perfect. There were many times that I had to explain myself and apologize. There was many days I didn't hit my mark. But I'm looking back over that for this National Recovery Month. I'm so grateful for who I am today, where I am in my life, for all the possibilities of those things that are yet to come, and for all of the amazing blessings that are right here, right now in my life, and the fact that I realize my power. I realize who I am, and I realize can't nobody or nothing come in and take my recovery from me. You can't do it. You can't knock me off my recovery, because my why is so much bigger than my old story. And let me tell you, your mind tells you stories every single solitary day. And it would behoove you, if you're looking for your power, to start to look at those things. I say this often, and I'll continue to do it. I say this all the time. It's like, look at the recurring themes in your life, whether it's the people, whether it's finances, whether it's things that happen to you. What are those common themes? And if you start looking at that, then start becoming aware of what your mind is telling you about that. What story is it telling you? Because with choice, you got to come and understand that there's also a choice in how you perceive things. And my perception started changing so generically and overworked at this point, but it's so true. My perception began to change when I started a gratitude practice. It really did. I wish there was a better answer. I wish there wasn't such an overused answer, but it was getting up and connecting. Because I didn't have 10 things to be grateful for, and that was what I had heard. I listened to a free online webinar by the late, the great Bob Proctor, and that was his suggestion, was make a gratitude list. Start out with 10 things that you are grateful for, and if you can't do 10, do 5. I could only really connect with one, because looking at my life at that time, I had the same beautiful family. You know, we were not homeless at that time. We were technically homeless, but we had a roof over our head. I could not see. All I could see were the problems. All I could see were the issues. All I could see was the misery. All I could see was the failing. I could not connect with anything. So what I ended up doing is coming into one thing. Just one thing. And I spent like 5 minutes in the morning, and right before I went to bed, I would just connect with that thing. And I really would just sit there until I embodied that gratitude, until I really felt it. And it seems kind of juvenile to say, but you know, it was my little dog. It was my little dog. You know, there was no issues around her. I wasn't failing her. She was super cute. Well, she is super cute. She was super cute. I wasn't failing her. She loved me so much. You know, she was fed. She liked me no matter what an asshole I was or what I was going through. She was always there to help. And that was what I began to connect with. And I tell you, over the course of probably 30 days of just doing that practice, I just started noticing little by little that I was adding to that list. And when I was adding to that list, it had me realize that my perception of life, of myself, of my family, of my situation was changing. And, you know, 10 minutes a day of effort, you know, it was well worth it. And so I just continue, and I still to this day continue that entire practice because I know that it works. I know that it works. And, you know, gratitude works for all of us. As different and individual as we are in so many ways, we are so much the same. And our brains are wired and our chemistry is wired to really respond to gratitude. And it's not your life that is your biggest issue. It's how you're seeing your life. And same in recovery. If you're coming into a recovery journey and all you think about is how hard it's going to be and who you're going to be and that you're going to have to leave your friends. And if you just look at all the obstacles, you may never step into your fullest potential as you. Whatever you're here to do, you may never get there, because here's something. You got to be here in order to heal. And as dangerous as it is right out there right now, there's a real possibility that you might not be. And so I don't pretend to know where everybody who'll watch this is, but if I can plant a seed of how important you are to this collective consciousness, to what your purpose is, what you came here to do. And I don't really care what the situation is. I'm not saying I don't care because I don't care about you. I'm saying it doesn't matter how hopeless you believe your situation is. That's a story that your mind is telling yourself. And if I can do this whole recovery and healing journey, I guarantee you can do it. And the suggestions that I would have for you is to start looking at your past. What have been the things that have hung you up every single time you've tried and failed? What is it that gets so overwhelming? What is it that you're escaping from? Get with some people that can support you. You know, seek out professional. If you go on MAT, that's fine. That's great. Do your deal. But don't wait for the program to change you. You get in there and change yourself. Programs are not necessarily out there meant for you to heal. It's kind of like our sick care model in this country. It's not about healing anybody. It's about keeping you on the wheel. And we don't have to villainize treatment programs. We just got to go in there knowing that. And your ultimate goal does not have to align with their ultimate goal for you to get the most out of it. I made my program work for me. I made it that way because I wasn't accepting anything less. I knew this was my last chance. I knew that if I did not step into recovery and do something radically different, in that moment, that I wasn't going to be here very much longer. And since I had made a promise to my grandfather as he lay dying, that I would figure out how to get my life together, that I would figure out a way to make him proud of me, as I carry his last name and his legacy, that I would do something special with that. And that he could go ahead and pass away in peace and he didn't have to worry about me, that I was going to figure it out. You know, these are the things that just kept driving me to keep going, to keep going. So you need that support. You need some kind of professional program or or some type of community. You know, if you need something medically or physically, until you get to a space where you've got some foundations under you, where you've changed your head and your heart enough to now take on the body, do that. Be unashamed of it. Don't go using something else and lie to yourself like I've done in the past. But go in with a pure motive, with a pure heart, with a pure intention of wanting to realize exactly who you are, why you're here, and all that you're made of. Because being out in active addiction ain't for the faint of heart. So no matter how weak you may feel like you are, you're not weak. You are not weak. You survive. And you've been surviving. I mean, you got up, broke, busted, and disgusted with nothing. You made a way that day. And there's something in you that is calling you forward to heal. You wouldn't be here in this podcast if not. It's calling you forward to heal. And healing is available. It's possible. And you're so fucking worth it. Just can't reiterate that enough. You're so worth it. We need you. This collective consciousness is shifting at such a massive rate that there are people that have nothing to do with a substance use and addiction and recovery that need what it is we got. And you could be helping to guide other people into a space of healing just by being your beautiful, amazing self. You don't have to do this. You don't have to stand up on podiums and scream how great life is when you're in recovery, because it ain't great all the time. That's the truth of it. It ain't great all the time. Healing is an ongoing process. You never get there and you never get it done. It's always happening. And you're always in control of how you take the next step. You can't control life. You can't control circumstances. But you can decide how you're going to continue to show up for yourself, for whoever's important to you, day in and day out, no matter what. And I want to tell you, if you're new in recovery, what's going to happen is, after you get past probably that first year, it's going to start certain ways of getting easier. You're not going to think about using all the time. It's not going to be your go-to every time something comes up. You're going to learn some new skills. You're going to become stronger and create a heftier, stronger foundation, and you're going to start going through this stuff. And I hope that you will take time in this journey to stop and turn around and look at where you've been, especially in the moments where you don't want to keep climbing that hill. You don't want to keep climbing that mountain. Turn around and look how far up you are. And start to see yourself through the eyes of that in which has created you. Whatever you call that, whatever your belief system is. There's absolutely something bigger than us. I don't have a patent on the name for it. I don't pretend to have all the answers about it. But I know you're special. You're super special. You're super special. Love this. Love this, empowering you to heal. Ugh, if I could do this just every day, helping other people understand how beautiful, amazing, and special, talented, gifted, creative, fucking badasses they are, then I would do that. I would do it, and I would do it for free. Oh, what's up, Rhonda? Yeah, I know, girl. I know. You got some special family, my sister. You really, really do. And if they for once would understand exactly who they are and the fact that they don't have to keep living this, you know, this same narrative over and over and over again, it'd be such a blessing. And I know how hard it is. And I'll say that, you know, my sister Rhonda, who, you know, watched me grow up, watched me crawl through the gutter and crawl my way out. Claw my way out's a better thing, because there were times and I had to keep myself hanging on to the whole recovery journey by a fingernail, like a holding on to my bedpost so I didn't go out and use. And to say that it was all perfect, that would be a lie, because it wasn't. But I'm here, man. I'm here 10 years later. But you know, for to say this for people who have family members that are going through substance use, and I just want to say to you, the same message for them, I say to you too, that you there is something real and very positive about creating boundaries around yourself and your happiness. We have a tendency, sometimes we can get addicted to our addicts. I don't even like using that word, but we can get addicted to, you know, being there and showing up and being always nervous and expecting the call. It's like human, it's instinct, you know, we're fearful. We don't want to lose people we love, especially when we feel like they're, you know, there's a different choice to be made. And, you know, I just want to say that I pray that you all take the same advice that I'm being given here. You know, find yourself a support community. Find what brings you joy. Sit down and create your boundaries. What are you willing to do? And what are you no longer willing to take from yourself in order to give to this other thing? And I don't mean thing in like the person. I'm talking about thing as in the disease. Because it's sucking from every person around, from every energy it's taking from. So you know, like what boundaries can you set around yourself in love and say, listen, this is what I can do. This is what I can't. Here's what I'm just not going to do. You know, I love, support you, and will do what I can to help you on your healing journey, but I can no longer in good conscience give in to this side of it, because I do want to know if something happens to you that I know that I did all that I could do in which was aligned with me on the inside. So, and everybody's boundaries are different, and that's where alignment comes in. It's where discernment comes in. It's where really getting connected to you and your source, you know, will help move you through this whole navigation, because it's hard. It's really, really hard. A lot of times when we're the family members of someone in active addiction, we end up doing all the things. We just don't get the high at the end. We stay in a state of panic and you know, getting that next call. And it can become like our emotions become almost addicted to that adrenaline. And, you know, we don't even realize it. We just don't even realize it. So, you know, I hope that ministers to someone else as well. What's up, John, watching on YouTube there? Thank you so much for always being here. I want to see what Michelle says. Let's see. Show it here. I'm 7 years clean and NA saved my life. And all of the people that I have on Facebook are the people that I turn to when I need them. That's amazing. Thank you, number one, for being here tonight. Thank you for sharing that. 7 years is a really big deal. 7 years is a monumental deal. In fact, if you look up the spiritual meaning and the numerology behind seven, it's a really, really brilliant, beautiful new beginning number. So, you know, 7 years, congratulations. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for being such a big part of the recovery community. Let's see what else. It's very true. You know, they want you to have a degree to be a drug counselor, but you know what, I'm experienced in drugs. Why do we need a degree? Yeah. You know, I actually had a bit of a conversation about this whole thing with one of my friends today. And we were talking about that, you know, we were talking about the whole peer support thing versus, you know, getting a counselor. And I know in some states you can actually get a drug and alcohol counselor's certificate that's like, I think, a 6-month program that you don't have to have a degree for. So, Michelle, I'm not sure where you live, but look into that for your state, wherever you are. Look into if there's a community college near you that actually has a drug and alcohol counseling certificate program. As we were talking about today, the peer support, I think the system on that whole peer support thing is kind of broken down in that they only require you to have like 1 year in recovery. And I think that's very dangerous, because peer support specialists, they're like foot soldiers. They're like the infantry. of this. You know, they're on the front lines. They are interacting with people who are still in active use every single day. They're generally going down to the places where these folks are. So they're kind of being inundated with all of those old feelings. And I believe that it takes at least 3 years to start honestly getting yourself out of that same vibration of that old environment, because our vibe attracts our tribe. And I know that for people early in recovery, it was for me too. I didn't want to feel like I was turning my back on people. I felt like I had to show up for them. I felt like I had to be there. I was giving. And I was just feeling energetically and financially and time-wise just empty at the end of the day. And so when we're talking about like peer support, which is, you know, I think it's valuable. I really, really do. I just think that there is a safer way to do it by letting people have a foundation of recovery for themselves before they throw themselves back in the fire. If you're someone out there who is thinking about becoming a peer support specialist, I would be really, really honest with myself. To be completely transparent, I'd be so honest with myself and ask myself if I'm truly able, not grandiose, not in grandiose style, because you might be strong and fine going down there on a day that your all cylinders are firing in line. But what happens on that day when it's just not? When you've been going through a lot of life, you know, I want people to be strong enough within themselves before they put themselves back in there. And that means that you got to walk away for a while and surround yourself with other people and different people. And you got to go through the guilt of breaking these trauma bonds that we make in active addiction, because we're all doing the same things for the same result that we bond. And of course, we go through tragic things together, because that's the nature of the life we're living. So of course, we're going to go through some traumatic things together. And I'm not saying that all of those friends aren't, you know, that's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is, you can't be trying to completely recreate your life and try to carry all of the past with you to do it. You know, some of those things you got to let go of. Then at some point, maybe you can come back there, and maybe not. It's like that whole Medea. Some people are meant for a season. Some people are meant for a lifetime. And sometimes it doesn't feel all that great to let the seasonal friendships go. Got to learn how to be grateful for those too. Everything has taught us something, from the best to the worst relationships we've had. And especially that relationship within ourselves, because your first relationship is with you. And if you look at your partner, you will likely look at a reflection almost of yourself on the inside, because that's what relationships come to do. Mirror back to us places that, you know, need attention and healing within us. That's why your significant other can make you madder than anybody on the face of the earth, because they are there to hash up and bring up things that need are asking to be healed in your own life, in your own self. No one ever completes you. You want to be in a relationship that's healthy, and it means two healed whole people coming together and, you know, accenting one another or sharing life together, not necessarily sharing trauma. So, okay. I think during my meditation, I always write down a couple things, and man, I never even looked really over here tonight, but yep, we sure did it. We sure did it. Everything that that I wrote down in my meditation, we actually talked about. So I just want to thank you. I want to celebrate each and every one of you that are a part of this National Recovery Month. I want to thank you for all of your effort, all the things that you're doing in your life, all the ways that you're healing your life, all the ways that you are creating a life that you love, and for just being a part of this earth with me. I'm grateful for all of your energy. So thanks everybody so much for sitting with me and listening to me and having these this and talking back and forth with me. Pam, I love you so, so, so much. You're right. There is always hope. If you got breath, there is hope for a better tomorrow. A better tomorrow. And I promise it can happen. So go check out Amazon.com/PamelaTopGian. Pick up her book. I didn't come this far to only come this far. Go check out my buddy Michael at Sober Press on Instagram. Go check out my good friend Joe, Deadpan Comedy over on Instagram as well. Thank you so much again, John. I appreciate you always for building me up and for all my beautiful, amazing friends. I'm the most blessed human being on the world. For my sisters, Lisa and Rhonda, I can't wait to see you guys again. I'm so overwhelmed right now with just pure gratitude of getting to bring this up and bring this out to y'all tonight that I could almost shed a tear, and I ain't going to do that. But I love you guys so much, and I appreciate you all being a part of my life and my energy, and I'm so grateful to be able to do this, and I'm grateful to be able to sit in the seat that I am today, because there just was a time that I just didn't think I'd ever be here. And I'm just grateful for life today. And I'm grateful for you. And I'm grateful for your lives. And please keep going no matter what. It's dangerous out there. You don't know what you're getting. Nothing is real anymore. This is not the old days. This is not my day. This is a new day. And there is a plan in place that is taking out as many people as possible. So please realize that your life is worth it. Please realize that you're worth it. Know that I love you, and know beyond anything else that you can get up from your give up, and you can create a life you love. Until next time, I love you guys so, so much. Have an amazing, amazing week, and I'll see you next time.